Hello and welcome to the Leaders in Tech and E-commerce podcast. I'm your host, Jaya Mittal, and I'm the Managing Director for Alcott Global for Asia Pacific and Middle East. Our mission is to connect the tech and supply chain and e-commerce ecosystem globally by bringing some of the most interesting and exciting stories about success and failure from the leaders in this industry. Today, I have with me Pali Tripathi, who's the CEO of Tabi Mobility, the newest company within the US dollar $5 billion conglomerate, the RPG Group of India. She comes with 16 years of experience across diverse leadership roles across Unilever, EY, Booze, and Sear Tires. She's a multifaceted business leader with experience across functions like HR, sales, and strategy. She enjoys working with uncertainty and creating opportunities from scratch. Before starting Tabi, Pali incubated the tire as a service concept for SEAT. She grew this business ground up and scaled it profitably for about $50 billion within 3 years. With Tabi, a company focused on providing an IoT-based SaaS solution for logistics players, she launched the flagship fuel solution product and reached 100 customers in 100 days. Tabi means journey in Japanese, a nod to Japanese quality standards blended with Indian hustle, and this is their story. In her free time, Pali loves climbing trees with her 5-year-old daughter, traveling off the beaten track and writing poetry and short stories when inspiration strikes. I'm looking forward to the conversation with Pali. Welcome, Pali. How are you doing today?
Hey, Jaya. I'm good.
Okay. So, you know, Pali, I know you from the time that you were in HR with Unilever, and now you are a business leader, you know, with a very successful group and now heading, you know, a completely different venture. So, you know, tell us about your journey from, you know, being an HR to a business leader within the overall SEAT and the RPG group, and then, you know, now to your role as the CEO of the Tabi group.
Sure. So first and foremost, thanks. Thanks for doing this, Jaya, and providing this platform to share a bit about myself as well as Tabi. So getting back to your question, I get this asked a lot, right? Like, it's almost like people have these demarcations of, you know, that if you start out with something, you can't do business, and especially HR, right? There's this whole thing attached with it that, you know, hey, you're HR and you don't understand business, you know. And I have had an about turn on this opinion on, you know, how useful that function is. So I just thought I'd put it out there. So I started being trained in human resources from Tata Institute of Social Sciences. It is one of the best in the country for human resources. And when I had started, it was all about, you know, this, because I also have a training in psychology before that. The idea was, you know, that this whole organization behavior was something that was very interesting. And I thought that's where it would be. And I joined Unilever from campus. And that's when I think you were there as a part of the story as well, Jaya. We were doing this whole Unileverization of Hindustan Levers. Yeah. And we're changing the operating model, we're changing policies, right? And everything. It was during that time that I got a bit of a taste of sales. So I was part of sales or customer development, as it was called. And we were looking at what kind of, you know, sales force structures would be applicable to India that would be different from the rest of the world for Unilever. And that's when what it hit me was that, you know, that any business problem that you solve, it has to come from a multidimensional lens, that it's not something that can be done just with finance or just with strategy or just with sales or just with human resources. So I think that was the first insight when I was doing this project. And of course, when I got into consulting after that, I went to EY, then I went to Booze, and you know, after that at SEAT. Successively, what I realized was that my most successful innings or projects have been places where I have been able to look at things a little differently from a done way of looking at the things, right? So, for example, there is always another dimension to just what is being presented. For example, if you look at a post-merger integration, it is not just about two companies coming together in terms of, you know, whether the business rationale makes sense, whether, you know, both the parties are getting what they're getting. And of course, there's, you know, huge legal documentation, there is financial vetting, etc. But what really matters is, hey, like, to the people on both sides like each other. And often whether mergers or acquisitions, whether they fail or they're successful, often it just boils down to the team. So I think that was one of the things that was picked up. So if I look at the journey, it's been that transition from being unifunctional about problem solving to gathering that whole toolbox of problem solving. So successively it went from, you know, from strategy to sales, and now in the CEO role, it is of course everything. It is how I'm able to kind of, you know, look at everything together. So that's essentially the history.
Very interesting. And you talk about, you know, the mergers and acquisitions, and, you know, one of the things you rightfully said is that most merge M&As actually fail because the people don't integrate well enough. You know, most of the positives of the M&As just get wasted. So, you know, in your journey now with, you know, the RPG and with the CN Group, you know, you're obviously working in the logistics and the supply chain, you know, the overall arena, both with CN, while, you know, you were in the marketing and the sales side of it. It is a business which is very closely linked to, you know, the overall logistics and supply chain of the industry. So, you know, what are some of the key trends that you now see, especially in the Indian subcontinent and India in specific around this? And what is sort of driving the overall business momentum over there and, you know, from your point of view?
So let me start with India, right? Because the whole genesis of at least what I do today, Tavi, is based on that India opportunity. Yeah. And India opportunity for India, but also, you know, that made in India for the world opportunity. So if you look at logistics, it is going through fundamental shifts right now. One, there's a very clear intent at the policy level, at the, you know, at the politics level to get India on par with the rest of the world in terms of our logistics spends, right? We are one of the highest spenders per mile or per kilometer when compared to the world. And the idea is, how do we get that to at least an average of the world in terms of our spend? And there's a huge focus on this. The whole new logistics policy that Modi unveiled, you know, some time ago, it totally talks about that how do you bring the costs down? How do you, and, you know, also how do you make it more efficient in terms of the time it takes per kg of a cargo to move a mile? How is it compared to the rest of the world? And what are the things that come in the middle, right? Of course, infrastructure is a big part of that story. So if you see, India is being built right now maniacally. So the people who would have visited India about 3 years back or 4 years back, like, one of the first things they notice is the roads, right? Like the connectivity and how much building is happening. And I think all that is in that direction, that how are you connecting everything to everything, whether it is rails to roads, whether it is last mile in terms of roads, right? So that's a big focus to bring down the costs so that you're making this whole transition seamless. The second thing is technology, where you're saying that the country is so massive that, you know, just like everything else that's happened in terms of all the other industries where we have skipped lot of things that the world has done, right? And we, for example, the way we've adopted mobile or internet, the penetration of these things across different sectors. I think a very similar thing is bound to happen in logistics tech as well, where to surmount a lot of problems in terms of visibility, transparency, accountability, you're using technology. So technology is a big thing, right? So the first is connectivity that I just spoke about, where infrastructure is being built, money is being spent. The second is around technology, which is essentially kind of driving all of this, right? And I think the third bit is around just the growth of the country, you know, right now, as well as what the vision is, right? So the numbers, and let me not get into it because depending upon who you're reading or what you're reading, the numbers differ. But the vision is huge in terms of, you know, tripling, quadrupling, you know, the size of the economy over a period of time. And already the growth is crazy compared to the rest of the world, right? About 7.5% average over the year is not something that you hear of in any part of the world right now, consistently. So, and if that is going to be accelerated, that momentum is going to continue and the growth is going to continue, then logistics is what will need it, will need to be kind of, you know, absolutely up there, absolutely world-class for India to deliver this vision, because you can't think of anything, right? Like everything, right? Right from your toothbrush to the soap that you use, to the food you eat, to like, you know, everything is essentially linked to logistics. So I think it's really exciting right now in terms of the change that is happening, in terms of the vision that is happening. And I believe this is also the opportunity for us to take this to the world. Because I think if you can solve for India often, you are able to solve for, I think, you know, the rest of the world. The complexities are such, you know, and of course, price points are such that if you solve for that, then it becomes, and logistics across the world is a value game. It is not a luxury game that, you know, people will pay whatever, right? It's not that. And logistics SaaS all the more, because everything needs to contribute to a top line or a bottom line. So in that sense, the sense the industry itself is very aligned to the way the country is, to the way India is. So if you look at the global industry, it thinks alike in terms of just that spendthriftness of it. The second is tech, right? I think we're great at tech. We've got some of the best engineers. We are exporting engineers right now. So there was a time when we were just doing a lot of this outsourcing, you know, low-grade developments. But right now, if you see the kind of work that's happening in the country, it's phenomenal, right? And especially in the
Can you share some examples where you've seen, you know, one or two examples of tech and how that has sort of shifted the game in the logistics space?
So if you look at it in terms of just this whole visibility, right? Like, and I was surprised, like I was traveling to Europe and I didn't see that in Europe that extensively as I see it in India. Almost every truck in the country has a GPS. Almost every fleet owner is kind of tracking their assets real time and using that data to make decisions. Now, the amazing thing is not that this is happening at such a large scale. The amazing thing is that it is being used by people who may not have even cleared their tenth. You know, that it may be done by generations of users who are just so good at mobile. But hey, you know, this is like a business that my dad started with two trucks and I've developed it. So these are not really those tech savvy business houses that are, you know, using this type of technology. And that's amazing and so heartening to see that is happening all along, right? And even some of the other, you know, high tech stuff, and those are the areas that we're also getting into and maybe we'll speak about, but something as simple as, you know, predicting a vehicle failure, right? With so much accuracy. Predicting an accident with reasonable degree of accuracy, like especially in a country like this, where you're able to say that, hey, I'm 98 to 99% sure that combined with this climatic condition, this traffic condition, this road condition, and this driver behavior, the accident is going to occur. And hence, let me alert the driver a minute before or 2 minutes before, depending upon, you know, the reasonability of it, to help reduce accidents, etc. So I think these are some amazing things that I believe, you know, it's very, very complex to solve for a country like India, given the diversity and given the way the country operates.
Yeah. Interesting. So, you know, given this whole logistics piece and the whole drive of made in India. So, you know, one of the things that a lot of our clients face, and, you know, especially in manufacturing, is India is great to enter. We clearly need to make over there because that's the push that is driving. So what are some of the success stories within the RPG group where you've had success, whether in the logistics space or the made for India, made in India, but for the world, or made in India for India, you know, sort of space in the RPG group?
So the first example, and that's something that, you know, I've been closely associated with, is SEAT itself, right? Like SEAT is... By the way, it's an interesting history, right? The brand is Italian. It was brought, it's Chiat in Italian, and it was brought And we got the right for global use of the brand much, much later, right? But it was
I
just
did
the
not know
brand.
that.
It is,
I did not know that. This is.
yes. In fact, in fact, most of the RPG group companies are inorganic stories, right? They're of successful inorganic growth, which is so rare to see in you know any place, right? You wouldn't have seen most business houses get it right so consistently across. So if you look at Seat is present across 150, 180 countries across the world. And, you know, one of the recognitions, because usually, you know, when you say it's India, there's always that little bit of, yeah, okay, but what about the quality, right? Like it's the cost arbitrage that people think, and they don't think that, hey, there's a quality that comes with it. So Seat got awarded the Grand Deming, right? It's the only tire company in the world to get that. And that's amazing because what we're talking about, and Deming is a Japanese body that recognizes your QBM way of operating, right? So the challenging thing here is that every part of the organization needs to come together to deliver that quality. So there was a Deming Award and now there's a Grand Deming Award. So it's the only tire company in the world, it's the only Indian company in the world to have won a Grand Deming. So I think that's an example of made in India. But
For the world.
You know, way, way, way above average for the world. The second is Zensar. Zensar is the IT software space, right? So that's a company where I think almost 90 to 95% of the business is global. It is not from India, right? So again, it is something that is made in India for the world. I mean, I can just go on, right? All of the company, like AEC is the infrastructure company, like some of the stories around the places that they built in across the world, right? From Afghanistan to like some of the most difficult terrains where they use drones, where they use like the latest gadgets and tech to ensure that a project is getting done on time is another example that is very Indian, right? So, with a global team, and with deliveries that are led out of India often in terms of orchestrating the strategy, etc., but delivered successfully. So I think RPG Group is that quintessential set of companies where I think we've got that right of you know, made in India for India and made in India for the world.
Excellent. I mean, you know, some of these examples actually, I'm from India, and having operated for so long outside India, it's not something that is, you know, so easily known to me. And then I think so if you're a non-Indian, these are not examples that will be on your radar.
Yeah.
So it's such a great thing to see that. And then, you know, I'm now coming to going from RPG to Tabi. And what drove the conception of Tabi and what is it all about? What are the customer pain points that you saw? I'm assuming that you looked at a certain pain point and from there originated this whole concept of Tabi. And what is it all about? Can you share a little bit about that?
Sure. So there's an interesting story linked to this. So the best background is that, of course, you know, I was leading this tire as a service business for Seat, which itself is a first of its kind, right? You don't hear many successful examples of it across the world. Forget about India, where you are billing the customer basis miles, right? So it's like pay per use. So you say that you take the tire, it is on my books, and you pay me basis the number of kilometers that you use. Now, to be able to deliver this kind of a business model or a value proposition, you need to, I mean, the first thing is you need to get the tech right. You need to be able to track that asset. You need to be able to ensure you're able to enhance that asset, right? Because unlike a tire sale, where you want to sell more and more tires, in this business, you want to sell less number of tires because you want each tire to last many, many more miles, right? That's how you make money, which is very different, you know, from a product sale. When you talk about a service, it is longevity of that service versus a product, which is repeatability, repeat purchase of that product. So very different fundamental shifts in the way both of these businesses operate. So when we were doing this and we're scaling very, very fast, what we're able to deliver, I think, consistently to the customer was this predictability of cost, that I know this is the amount that I will spend on a tire. So often what used to happen was a customer used to think, I have paid X dollars to buy a tire, and they used to think that is the cost of the tire. Whereas when we showed them that over 15 months or 18 months, you've actually spent this much on the tire. Because there is a lot of that repair and maintenance and downtime that happens related to the tire. And there's a cost to that. There's a total cost of operation of a tire, which usually was not a part of the lingo of a fleet operator. So when we started talking about that, that's when the penny dropped, right? That's when aha moment would happen. There was like, oh, I'm spending like 3x, 4x of what I thought I was spending. And then what you're doing is you're bringing predictability. You're saying that, you know, this is, let's say, X paisa per mile is what I'm going to be charging you. This is what you will continue to pay. And, you know, over a period of time, this is the budget that you need to allocate for it. And we're doing this successfully, consistently, you know, with the customers. And what we started getting from them was, yeah, this is great. This is helping me solve the problem. But, you know, there are so many bigger costs. Like, we wish we were also looking at those costs. So that was the amazing bit, you know, that this insight came from the customers. And of course, we're aware that, you know, tire is, at the end of the day, 7 to 10% of the cost of a fleet of operation. The biggest cost is the fuel, which is, you know, 60% of the operating expenses of a fleet. So that's where it started, that, hey, can we do something around this, of course, right? And I always had this Kira of, you know, okay, I mean, Kira, I don't know what the English translation of the word would be, but there's always this, you know, needle of an idea that, you know, somewhere, you know, there was an opportunity here that was much bigger than a business within SEAT, that it was beyond tires and it was beyond, you know, just this part of the tech, and that it was also beyond the kind of customers we were catering to, that use cases that could be across industries, across customer types. And that's when, you know, we started doing this churning of, you know, what would the business opportunity be? We got an external consultant to also come and vet it, you know, and also just measure it against all the other opportunities available. So we, in fact, evaluated almost 200 opportunities across spectrums to see that if SEAT wanted to diversify, because, you know, our purpose, SEAT's purpose is making mobility safer and smarter. So that allows for you to play in a lot of the new age mobility stuff. So we looked into various domains. So we looked into ADAS, we looked into battery units, right? We looked into EV, we looked at a lot of opportunities, and then we drilled down to this, that this seems to be our strength. We know the customers, we have a foot in the door. Like, nobody's going to ask us, why are you coming to us to talk about something else, right? That trust factor is there. And we will build for everything else. So that's the genesis, that, you know, our customers told us that do more in terms of this kitty of cost that you're looking at. And we did under the hood, you know, analysis of a truck. We would like literally visit these centers to try and see, you know, what could be the places. But what it boiled down to was that at the end of the day, it's all operations. At the end of the day, a fleet owner needs to understand that if a driver is idling, there's a cost attached to it. It's not just, you know, that the 20 minutes, you know, it sometimes leads to loss of a customer also. If you're going to a customer and the customer is making you wait every time, way more than your other customers, then you need to have that data ready for you to talk to your customer the next time you're negotiating the contract, that, hey, you know, I charged you this, but the assumption was you will release my truck in this much time. But on an average, you're detaining my trucks for so much longer, right? Similarly, in mining, right? In mining, you use about 20,000 to 30,000 liters of fuel per day per site on these, right? It's mammoth. Just your ability to track what is happening with fuel leads to efficiencies. So there are a lot of those things that started coming that, you know, we need to get into this space. So it started with fuel, but then it's also directly impacting uptime. If you're able to work on the asset, if you're able to ensure that it is managed well in terms of maintenance, in terms of route optimization, etc., your ability to churn, you know, your assets across different types of needs is much, much better. You don't need to buy that many trucks for the same type of a business need. So yeah, so that's the, you know, to cut the long story short, that's where it started. The pain point was that, for tires, I see this predictability in my cost. Can I see this predictability across domains?
Such an interesting story. So, you know, 100 customers in 100 days. Huh? You launched it in May, and Vaila, it seemed to have. How has that journey been? I mean, what's been the reception, and what are now the next challenges that you are seeing? You know, what's next on the horizon? So tell us a little bit about, you know, that initial success, and now where is Tabi headed to?
So we're closer to 200 now, by the way. So I think that's the
Congratulations.
number that we should be talking about. Yes. So what was important for us in terms of, you know, reaching the first 100 customers was, you know, like I said, India is a very value conscious market. The customer needs to see not a very sexy platform and, you know, like these beautiful reports and these cool things, you know, that typically get associated with tech. What they need to see is that I spent X, how much time is it taking for me to get a return on my investment?
Yeah.
Right. And if you're able to show that story consistently and believably, right, you're not fudging numbers. It is something that is about their operation on their screens with their logins, that they're able to see these differences. So the first 100 customers was about that are you able to show that realization of, you know, 5% or 15% in fuel savings to customers across segments. Now, as we look at the next set of journey, next set of things, you know, that we want to do, one aspect of this whole thing is, you know, just the way the tech is getting delivered. How do you make it so simple? And this is something that I always tell my team, and I tell whoever else is asking this question, that, you know, our competition in terms of using tech is not other logistics players or apps. It is all the other apps that exist on a phone that a fleet operator or a mining operator or an enterprise uses. So are we as simple and intuitive to use as an Amazon, as a Google, right? So I think the next part of the journey is about that how do we build our tech to be so simple to use that it's not even taking mind space. It becomes a part of, you know, doing business. It's so seamless. It's so easy to use. So that's one. The second is on the fuel problem. We are solving for about 40% of the total value available to solve. There are a lot of other technologies that will come in that will take this further to about 80 to 85%, right? So for example, can I direct an asset or a truck to go to a cheaper filling point as opposed to the usual, right? Because across states, there is a difference in what you're charged for per liter, right? So can I tell a driver that at this stop, you fill only this much, then you take your truck to this stop and then, you know, you're able to be charged less as a result for it. Am I able to give a predictive maintenance plan that enhances the life of the asset? So if you see right now, all the maintenances that are done by each of these operators is as per the OEM. So there's a standard thing that is given, and that is what gets done. But the way a truck gets used is very, very different. So an e-commerce usage would be very different from a cement usage. The roads on which the trucks are driven are very different. Then there's an Ashok Leyland versus an Eicher versus, you know, Tata Motors. They would be very different. So are you able to give a customized maintenance plan that then says that I guarantee a 10% improvement in asset life over a period of time? We're just launching the control tower, you know, as we speak. Are we able to tell an enterprise that you don't bother about your transportation? You let us track your assets and we will tell you what needs to be done and we will drive the SLAs because it's not core to you. I mean, why do you need to do that, right? And I have a control tower screen and I'm able to do it for multiple customers. And lastly, it is, you know, we will go international. We mostly, you know, launch with Middle East and with first set of our customers and then look at Indonesia, Malaysia as the next set of customers. So that's the other thing, that delivering those proof of concepts for countries that are similar to India in terms of the problem statements that we define. So yeah, I think there's quite a bit on what needs to be done.
I'm looking forward to seeing and welcoming you in GCC and then also ASEAN. I think these are exciting markets and you're right, very similar to India. I have a question. Have you yourself driven on a truck, and what's been one of the most exciting journeys if you did that for yourself?
Haven't driven on a truck, but I have been, and maybe I'll send you some pictures, but the place where mining gets done, where you're literally climbing assets to see if your fuel gauges, etc., how they are built. I have not driven trucks because not much gets done when the truck is being driven. I mean, when the truck stops is when the work when our work kind of gets driven. So there's been quite a bit of that, being in a yard or being on a site and being on the asset and seeing, what kind of tech it comes with and what is needed to enhance it. Because bulk of the trucks in India are not really the BS6, which is, while it's changing and now no new trucks get manufactured which are not BS6, but there's a huge sizable chunk which don't really lend themselves easily to be an IoT enabled asset, right? It's difficult for you to extract the data that is needed from older vehicles, right? So a lot of these, kind of being around these assets has been about what's possible. Also, I'm not a tech person. I'm not an engineer. I don't understand codes. So a lot of what I understand is through actually, being there on the site and asking my team, this thing that we talk about, show me how it's done. And it's true for all of it, right? For me to be able to translate that into an actionable related to a business. I mean, that's how I make sense of being right there, being with the customer, with the team to understand. So yeah.
Such a powerful thing that you said, right? That you truly understand when you are with the team and with the customer. I mean, it's less about, just it's about connecting some of the dots and then getting the right people to do what they need to do.
Absolutely.
I'm also very curious. You must be sort of like a role model, female leader, CEO, broken a lot of barriers. What have been some of your fun moments and challenges along the way, and how did you navigate them?
So I think the funnest moment is when my daughter kind of, she's my biggest brand ambassador. So she says that mama runs Tabi, right? She thinks that's a big deal. So for me, that's a wow. But aside from that, I think this whole transition from, of course, I was heading business parts of business functions. But when you run a company, it's everything, right? From your tax compliance to somebody feeling left out because they have just joined remotely in some part of the country and they're coding for you. How do you get them to feel connected to, really taking punt on things and yet being frugal? That just because, you're part of the RPG group and there is, that freedom to do a lot, but there's also that frugality that comes in that how do you, balance growth with reality? So I think those are the things that have been very interesting in terms of getting into this. In terms of the female bit, I don't want to underplay it, but what's been very refreshing, Jaya, is that, and especially in the field that I'm in, that I think maybe for a few seconds there is curiosity that you're a female, but the moment it switches to business or dhanda, it's you are genderless. You are a CEO. You are not a male CEO or a female CEO, right? It doesn't get to the gender. I think so. There's no bias. I think what I'm able to read is there is curiosity, and hence would you be looked at in a certain way out of curiosity? Will you have people fumbling a little bit because they don't know, how to kind of talk to you? Yes, of course, that's something that happens, and it's part of any context where it's not a done thing. But what I believe is that the moment you're able to shift the conversation to something substantial, it works in your favor because I think as women, as females, we also bring a lot in terms of empathy, in terms of being able to connect when you talk, when you're able to, even in my conversations, I'm never able to be cut and dried about, you know, whatever, whether it is a team or whether it is this. And I think a lot of it is because I am a woman, you know, this is the way I operate. I can't operate like a man. I don't know how to. And I think that works great in terms of building genuine relationships. So yeah, like I think earlier parts when I think you would have experienced that in Unilever, etc., when we go to certain factories and all, like you would not have many females, and
yeah,
it was always, you know, one of the things. But now what I understand is that the world is much more evolved. What does need to change is this whole army of support that is needed for a woman to be successful. It's very, very difficult to be successful as a woman if you have not chosen your spouse well, if you've not got a support staff at home or some sort of whatever, you know. So I'm not going to like underplay that it's much more difficult for a woman to do pretty much the same thing, right? So I don't think we still have equity, right? We've got equality, I think, to some extent.
Yeah.
But the shift and the focus on equity is something that I think needs more. At least that's what I've learned over the years, if I just look at the female context of marriage.
I kind of understand. In fact, one of the, you know, the lines I've heard a lot of my female colleagues tell me is that, as they say, behind every successful man, there's a woman. And behind every successful woman, there's a good house help. At least that's the kind of, you know, conversation we used to have when we were in India. I'm, you know, one of the last questions, tell me, you know, logistics has traditionally been a field which is very male-centric, maybe because, you know, of the nature of work and, you know, how it was perceived. I think it is a little bit about how it was perceived, because logistics and supply chain, there are very successful cases of factories that are all female, or, you know, there's a large proportion of females in the factory. And in fact, the IR situations in those factories are relatively less volatile. They tend to be, at least, but, you know, where do you see, what are some of the examples and successful examples that you may have experienced trying to improve this gender balance in the whole supply chain vertical overall? And when I say supply chain, because I know you've touched various parts of it through your career, any successful experiments or examples that you can share?
So I'll share a couple from within the group itself. Right? For example, if you look at SEAT, tire making units are not really easy places to be, right? Like, while they're best in class and they're, you know, automated, robotized, you know, their air conditioned shop floors, but they're manually exhausting often. Just the stuff that's required in the environment that's required. SEAT has been able to, like, one of the plants, Nagpur plant, and, you know, a few others where, you know, we have that as a mandate. There are as much as about 30% of the people on the shop floor are women. These are the women that are building tires. They're producing tires, right? So my learning from that is that, hey, let's not assume that this is a man's job and this is a woman's job. I think that's where, if you're able to do that, that equal opportunity starts. You know, that paternalistic way of assuming that, you know, this is an unsafe place, or this is, you know, this is too much of physical labor for a woman, or, you know, she's going to get pregnant soon, so let's not give her this, or she's going to get married, so let's not. I think that's where the problem starts. If you just say that, let me just be the adult and treat the other person as the adult and let her make that decision of what she can or she cannot do, I think a lot of things begin to shift. So SEAT has done that successfully on the shop floor. And they also change in policy. So, for example, we have women who are territory sales leaders who are, you know, traveling kilometers,
yeah,
in remote locations across the country. So something like period leave, for example, is something that's been instituted, where you say that the X number of days where, you know, you can just take off, because it's practical, right? Like, it's difficult to change, and it's difficult to have access to washrooms across places, etc. So do that instead of assuming that I will only have females in metro locations. Because the moment you do that, you only have 15 roles or 20 roles. the way, if you open up, let's say, the whole of India or the whole of world, then you have that many positions that are available for women. So you solve like that. You solve by making life easier in those contexts, as opposed to taking those contexts away altogether and not really making them available. So that's my learning, I think, and that's something that we're trying to also instill as a part of Tavi. But it is tough. It is tough to get enough number of CVs. It is tough to often, even with the incumbents themselves, convincing them that, hey, yes, of course you can do this. Because there comes a lot of baggage also that, no, my family will say this, my husband will say this, etc. Right. So often when you're solving for a woman candidate, you're solving for so much of that background also that, whether you can do it differently for them, without being condescending about it, without being paternalistic about it, just being an adult about that. So I think that's my learning.
Okay, so one last question as we come towards the end of this conversation. You've got about 20 plus years, 22, 23 years of experience with the industry,
16 years, actually.
right? Okay, it feels like 20. Yeah, I mean, what you have packed in 16 years, it actually feels like 20. What would you say to yourself when you look back at your journey? What would you say to your younger self now that you are here at this juncture in your life? Would you do something different, or something that you would change, or something that you would do different, or not? I'm just curious to understand that.
No, I don't think I would change a thing, Jaya. I think I would say well done to her.
I would
I
say.
think I'm so glad that and this is something that I tell all the people that I mentor or coach, and that's something that I love doing as a part of my role, that giving some of this back to people who really need it. Is that you just say yes, shamelessly just say yes to things that make you afraid, things where you believe you're not, hey, you're only 50% there, things that you believe, other people may not accept you with. I think that, without the baggage, without the fear, just go ahead and say yes. Because I think a lot of successes come from just being present for the opportunity. You'd realize that it's a long race, right? It's a marathon. It's not about that one stint or two stints. I believe your ability to stay in the race, your ability to just continue to show up every time is what makes you successful. And I'm glad I have done that. And if there's one takeaway from my career for anybody, I think that would be it, to just shamelessly say yes to things that scare you.
Cheers to that. I've seen that and I've experienced that with you. Faced with a problem where you did not know all the answers and you would just go and ask 10 people for help or just keep banging at the door, till it actually opens. So I've experienced that firsthand with you. I really had a great time chatting with you.
Thank you.
And,
Thank you so much.
wish you the best for the upcoming festival season. And I hope that we can meet in person soon. All the best to
Absolutely.
you and the venture, Tabu.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Jaya, for doing this.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you like what you heard, be sure to go to www.alcottglobal.com and click the podcast button for all the show notes of the interview. Also, subscribe to our mailing list to get our latest updates first. If you're listening to a streaming platform like iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, we would appreciate the kind review. 5-star works best to keep us and the production team motivated and happy. And of course, share it with your friends. I'm most active on LinkedIn, so do feel free to follow me. And if you have any suggestions on what to do and who to invite next, don't hesitate to drop me a note. And if you're looking to hire top executives in supply chain or transform your business, of course, contact us as well to find out how we can help you. Thank you.